بنت هاي كان وشين بنت هاي قولي هذا اي جين
darling?
Sure.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Thank you. Are you surprised? You want to see?
Yes. Yes, you know.
I would like to welcome you to this important meeting. I'm saying the meeting is important because we have the Bafana Bafana team from the Kenya. And I think this is one of the questions that you need to prepare for. That where are the women? Because we expect whenever we get a delegation from any institution, we expect to see women. But we welcome you, and we are hoping that you are going to enlighten us. I usually say that as a social committee on art and culture, when we ask questions, please be assured that it has nothing to do with you personally. Don't personalize anything. We don't personalize issues here. When we ask questions, we want to understand. And we are asking questions on behalf of the people that we are representing, because we are public representatives. So we are the presenting. We have invited other portfolio committees to this meeting because you also serve other departments like the tourism, and we know that you report to higher education, but you want information that is specific to us. We have invited other portfolio committees so that they benefit. So that they benefit from the information that you're going to give us. Although we know that this is specific to art and culture, to the issues of art, culture, and heritage. And we're going to give an opportunity for us to introduce ourselves because it's the first time that we come to the Portfolio Committee on Art and Culture meeting. I am Paul Bertram, the chairperson of the portfolio committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Frida Kadine from the Higher Education Portfolio.
Of this committee. my name is Nambudali Nurjul, PMG Monica.
Thank you very much. Jabu, can you introduce yourself?
Good morning, everyone. I'm Ashraf Ali, the agent is here, also called Secretary. Thanks.
Good morning, my name is Fiona Kitchen. I'm the research for this project.
Good morning, my name is Monica Newton. I'm from the Department of Arts and Culture. I'm the DDG for Arts, Culture, Promotion and Development.
We can assist, we can have them at the back when they are doing good and ask questions, and also tell them where we see that they are not doing good. But I think as a completely communal arts and culture, what we have noticed is that arts and culture issues are at the periphery. Wherever you go, whatever you do, people are just shifting it to the side. So it's a by the way thing. And this is what is happening even in the Catholic Center as we were looking at the document here, that there is no focus on this. So as you give your presentation, as you present, be assured that that is going to be our first question. Okay, I'm giving it over to you for your presentation.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to honorable members for affording us an opportunity to come and share the work that we're doing as a sector in all the infrastructures that we are responsible for. Firstly, let me just take this opportunity to permit the members and indicate that we are a sector that is currently under administration. The sector has been under administration since mid-October. From the 16th of October 2014, and the administrator is supposed to complete the task at hand in terms of the gazette that was issued from the 15th of October this year, which is next month. We are under administration for quite a number of reasons. After the minister had asked the board of former board of SCTR to resolve the issues that were putting the organization in a position where it could not perform and actually deliver on its mandate. And I think on two instances, if I'm correct, that the minister actually requested the board to try and resolve those issues so that they don't impact on the performance of the organization, but also as the government body that they must ensure that all of those issues are resolved. We are at a stage where we are stabilizing the organization in the sense that we started on a footing where the CETA had received a qualified opinion from the Auditor General, and there were a couple of issues that we must have of emphasis. We have since moved the CETA from that position to a position where currently, as we speak, it has received an unqualified body opinion. We have also managed to improve the performance of the CETA in terms of achieving our targets as set in the annual performance plan, and we continue to have challenges. And I think the issue that the chair was raising as it relates to the reflection of the delegation is an issue that we take seriously. And the part of what we want to do as strengthening the management aspect of the organization is to ensure that there is representation in terms of women in the management of the sector. And I can assure you, Chair, that as we come back to the college to present, the picture will be completely different. At the middle management level, we were a significant percentage, and the majority, about 90%, is women. So in terms of the reflection here currently today, not necessarily a full reflection, but at an executive level, I commit that we are going to make sure that there is representation. We will welcome the engagement, we welcome the guidance from you as our leaders, as we present here, who are here to actually have that kind of the guidance and assistance. So we will receive the feedback positive from you. At this point, I will ask Mr. Mwanda, who is an executive at Kensita, to take you through the presentation, and then we'll take guidance from you thereafter. Thank you very much.
Okay. smallest sister of the 21 sisters. Study a second smallest. With an average income of about 260 million a year. And mainly, like all the other sisters, our key purpose is to contribute to the South African community through skills development. I think what resonates as the thora of the standard and also to emphasize that we are a constitutional establishment and then guided by various acts up to the international regulation that give us direction in terms of what we are expected to deliver. Our vision is to be a leader in skills development within our service sector, and our mission is to ensure that we facilitate skills development in strategic partnerships for sectors to contribute to economic development and to work for the needs of the youth, one of which is saving excellence to stakeholders. It's also important to emphasize that while arts and culture is within our scope, we also have quite a number of other smaller sub-sectors, conservation, gaming and notary, hospitality, sports, recreation and fitness, as well as tourism and travel activities. And it's also emphasized that conservation, hospitality, including arts and culture, are sub-sectors that thrive on volunteering and sponsorship, the kind of funding. And the skills development system is crafted in such a way that the mechanism that relies on a formal employment sector. I will indicate this as we go forward. How the impact on the tourism, on the arts and culture sector. Just to indicate the number of entities in respect of their size. In 0 to 49 is the number of employees or people employed within companies. The total number of companies that are registered on CACIDA is not for me to reflection of the number of companies in the country, but it's what we have on our database as we get information from staff. It's about 25,000 in total, and of that 25,000, about just over 1,000 arts and culture companies, which makes it a very small percentage of about 4.2%. And the largest is just to indicate increasing the hospitality, which is up to 70% of the infrastructure of the service. Also to reflect the geographical spread of our registered entities, just to indicate that a very big percentage is located in Halten, Western Cape number 2, and Cape 10 number 3, and the smallest is in the Northern Cape. And again, this will then manifest itself in terms of how we end up with the beneficiaries. and also to indicate that most research entities are small companies, and immediately they have or they generate a wage bill of less than 500,000 a year. They then get a franchise from paying the skilled and in many cases, immediately we have many companies within that rather. What happened is that we intend to meet those organizations because we then don't know who they are, where they are, and we have to rely on research to find them. As a result, our knowledge into the Asian culture fails us and we come to reach disadvantage. In terms of the number of employees, we just projected a percentage and you see that a total of 25% is hospitality and Aspen culture is about 1%. I think I'm just going to collect the information and present the analysis put in the center of the actual criteria of 1%. So in respect of the research employees within our sector is 1%. I will also reflect the salon for the opportunity to indicate what are the actual national statistics from the television satellite account, what figures they indicate in terms of the social employment in the agriculture sector. And I think it's also important that we continue looking at what other culture sector is in respect of the other sector. And it is true and we believe that other culture is one of the national important subsectors. And as of this 2015, a total of about 1,100 African cultural heritage entities are registered in South Africa, and currently just under 3,000 employees were reported in 2018, and we are expecting that the research that we are commissioning will actually give us better insights into this subject. Now, coming to the actual particular problems or any problems that we are administering throughout the country, we have got leadership as our core individual, followed by gradualist achievement program, what is accredited learning, we accredited next year, or just graduate intention. So those are the five core learning programs that we will then be looking at across the country. What we can indicate is that in 2014 and 2015 we spent about 2.8 million on learnership, and in the first quarter of 2015-16 was spent or allocated close to 3 million on learnership, and we indicate provinces where Falcon, Free State, Limpopo and the Eastern Cape. Also that trusted and invitation opportunity, I will give you information that will give you a good exam, goes on like that in terms of internships. On the 14th in 2014-15 and 15 in the first quarter of 2015-16, and Barbara is about the first one issued in 2014-15 and 18 in the first quarter of 2015. Here at the moment, our report here will indicate just the highlights. Might have not included all the information that we have in our data based because of the short speech that we have to make information available. But we have indicated a bulk of it. Now, to go into leadership, just to unpack what it is that we are training on. Mainly, what the qualification called further education and training certificate in performing arts, that's N2F 11-4. In 2014-15, there were about 20 unemployed learners that were trained in the province of the state. And the similar qualification is the same in third level in the same 2014-15. About 10 unemployed people trained in Calcane. And we also got technical event production, about 27 people in Calcane who trained for the technical qualification. And also in 2015-16, the first quarter, we have a total of about 60 beneficiaries who were or work entered the leadership programs in performing arts, crafts, enterprise, and music industry qualification. And this is reflected across Calden in both movies and games. Again, to break down the effect of barbarism, where the total of 27 learners in Southend in the year 2014-15 in the various qualifications and certificates from bachelor's degrees, honors, and master's enrollment. And to continue with the barbarists, we have allocated 11 in TSN and 5 in seven in the States and one in the Northwest in the financial year. And a total of 18 in different qualifications as well. This is still bad value for the States, Hogan and Western East. And this is in the first quarter of 2015-16. And the next slide just indicates the breakdown skills programs. We have listed the different types of skills programs, different but short programs. They last for about just over a unit standard, which could be one day to a year. Kind of a team program depending on the time that team. With a total of 263 beneficiaries in the first beneficiaries in the different team program in the past financial year in the program 13 days
thank you very much. And I think we need to applaud the administrators for the work that they have done. Because when you find institutions or entities getting a qualified audit or a disclaimer or an advert or this opinion, that gives a negative, you know, perception from the people that you are supposed to serve or from the people that you are serving. It is very important for entities or institutions that are assisting government to achieve its objectives, to ensure that they operate in a manner that is going to show people out there that this institution is in good hands. I think we need to applaud. And when the Auditor General gives an opinion, what we expect is that that entity or institution is going to go out there and line by line look at the issues that are raised by Auditor General and have a plan on how to address those issues. So I think this is what has happened. And it's a pity really that some of the entities that we oversee seem not to be in touch with their money, with what they have to do. And as a result, they end up fighting amongst themselves because they don't have a deeper understanding of what they are supposed to do. We want to applaud the fact that you have obtained an unqualified audit. And just to say that what we as all the portfolio committees, we are looking for a clean audit. We said that by 2014, all government departments and their entities should achieve a clean audit. And I don't think it's a difficult thing to achieve a clean audit, as long as you do what you are supposed to do every day. Day in and day out, you do what you are supposed to do. And one of the things that I think we feel as portfolio committee that is not happening is that people who don't do what they are supposed to do don't get any consequences. Which is bad. Because if I am employed, nobody is being asked to do anything. People are paid to do what they are supposed to do. And if people don't do what they are supposed to do, there should be consequences. But within government and in the entity, you rarely find consequences being taken against. Consequences. People getting the consequences of their actions. So I think it's important. And we applaud you for the work that you are doing, and we are encouraging you to do more. In your presentation, I think that the figure that you put in, when you say there were so many 20 plenaries, there were so many, those figures that you are showing today, they leave us cold as the Controller Committee. If you don't tell us, out of what? Because we need to measure. We are here. You are accounting here. And if you just give us figures, we don't know what to measure. You were supposed, how many were supposed to get, and so many did receive. So that we have a picture, you know, where we can measure you. Because if you give us those figures, we can't measure you. We are saying, okay, that's the only thing that we can say. Because we don't know how many people, because as a portfolio committee, we've said this to the department, that if there are instances when it really failed to us, that you just got into this apartheid bus, and you just changed the driver, and you drove on, without looking at the provinces, you know, because there are provinces that were not benefiting, they were behind then. They were disadvantaged then. They are still disadvantaged as we speak. And this is what we think you should do. So evaluate, to look, for instance, if you are saying, last year you have all the zeros in Mpumalanga, and this year just got and you still have zeros, it means that you didn't do your homework to ask this year. Because if you had seen that there are zeros in Mpumalanga last year, you should have gone out there, find out the reasons why there are zeros, identify the problem and deal with them, so that this year you'll be saying, you'll be seeing an improvement. And this is what we are not seeing. You reported zeros last year, and first quarter we are still seeing zeros, which I think is really telling us that you did not apply your mind. And I'm now going to give members an opportunity to ask questions. You will note the questions, and as we said earlier, you are not on the guillotine, but what we expect is that you just respond to the questions as honestly and openly as possible, so that we together find solutions, because it is not about any of us in this room. It is about the people that we are serving. Honorable members, I'm giving you an opportunity to ask questions and make comments. It looks like this is the mother policy, the Department of Higher Education. So you are come to him, and she's the one who wants to ask the best question. And are there any members? Honorable Makoto? Honorable Hotwom? Honorable Mashomini? In that order? Oh, honorable member, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me first start by commending the entity for the improvement that they have made. It was really a one factor when you see them on the qualified opinion, and they move to the unqualified, which is commendable. Now, I just want to check with them in terms of Bazar Kamwani. You are saying in 2014-15 you allocated 51, which amounted to 3.8 million. And going to 2015-16, you only allocated 18, which amounted to 1 million. There's a huge difference there. Maybe you can tell us the reason for the decline. And in terms of training, there is a significant number of training that is shown in the urban areas than in the rural areas, where there's a demand, where there are people that are very poor there. And can you tell us the rationale behind that? Why is this allocation not done equally? What is the problem? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Of course, we want to welcome the presentation. We want to welcome the presentation as presented by the candidates. We, on the last slide, that's where I want to start. There was an indication of Mpumalanga and no information. But again, there was an indication of Northwest. And there was no information in Northwest on the last slide. Can you just put it on the board? And again, when you look at the hard copy that we have received, there is an information on the request. there is an information on what works. On balance, you have got one learner and one learner to put. Is that the last line?
Yes.
There is an information on the board. I begin to doubt whether the information that was presented to me here has been checked before you present it. We want to clarify it. That why is your information inconsistent and why it should be you. The other issue that I want to raise is in line with your services as a teacher. You continue with the apartheid pattern. 21 years after the democracy. Which will regard them as poor provinces, continue not to receive services from you. If you look on your internship, you concentrated only on two provinces and one, which is Gauteng and Western Cape. And these are the provinces. These are the provinces that have got a lower number of rural areas compared to Eastern Cape, compared to Limpopo and Mpumalanga, and Northwest, and why do you continue to concentrate on the provinces that have been around when you look at current situation in the country. The other issue relates to bursaries. There are no bursaries. You have not provided bursaries on three provinces, which is Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Northern Cape. What mechanism do you use to distribute this bursary? It is because of need, and how do you arrive on the six provinces, not this one? Because we believe the issue of skills development is far, I mean, in the three provinces, they are far behind the provinces that were provided for your housing, your Western Cape, your Free State. And these are the provinces that had universities even before 1994. The issue which the chairperson spoke about, the issue of your qualification. I think it's a serious concern that a small teacher like you continues to perform very well when it comes to financial management. You're receiving the smallest budget of all the teachers. And we would not agree more on that. Will continue to perform very well. But we have received information as you presented your report to the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education that there's misuse of funds by some board members and senior management. So obviously, whether the misuse of public funds, you will not get it in your your scope as a citizen is around the smallest sector, your tourism, agriculture, heritage sector, but you continue to perform very well, even in providing services in that particular sector. So we want to be briefed as to whether there are consequences taken in relation to the issues that are raised, the issue of misappropriation of public funds. Can we be briefed in relation to that? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I think the honourable member has touched on some of the questions I wanted to ask. But I will start with the first one in terms of just to find out if the CETA has a approved language policy. Maybe they should give that answer to the department who is here, which is here. And the second question is, having taken note of the bursaries that are not to the provinces that my honourable Makonda mentioned, is where do the students go to? How do they apply for these bursaries within their province? Because myself, I haven't seen any exercise, or I don't know what is the process they follow. I also need to just find out the geographic spread of the arts and culture and ethnic sector, which areas are involved there. And then also the enterprises. And I think also what is the last question is that you see there is such a there was a question around the depletion of challenges that you have, depletion of funding resources for the sector across the board. Now the funding, is it only funding from DEC and also for the skill development within the province? Or is there another source of funding for the sector? And I just want to ask another question. There is, I've seen in some of your earlier slides you referred to drama therapy. I just wanted to find out, because I know drama therapy belongs to psychology, and I just needed you to explain what is this drama therapy all about.
Thank you, Mr. President, for the presentation. My colleagues did mention the issues of the background, and also they did give us the breakdown of it. And also the Chairperson of Higher Education mentioned the issue of the EU rural areas. My concern is that what is the impact of practical in the rural areas? And also, number two, can you please mention the figure of the beneficiaries from the rural area out of Qatar? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair Sassoon, and also thank you very much for inviting us. Last week, I had the privilege of being with Lara. Today, I'm with Katsi. And there are some vast differences between the two, yes, and within African culture. Chair Sassoon and the members from Katrina. I thank you for the information, but also may I reiterate what other people have been saying. It seems that transformation in this particular sector is very minimal, if any. There is just minimal transformation. It means we are still belonging to the 1900s. We still belong before 1994. Because it looks like really. Yes, it told us that we've got women, but transformation actually in the service delivery that you're telling us about. In May, we had Idaba, and Katrina was telling us that they're still at the administration, but are working very hard to come at the administration. Maybe it's important to work in Ghana so that we see a change and a difference. I shall also mention what the other people have been saying. The rural provinces are really, really isolated.
Mm-hmm.
From this information, they're absolutely isolated. So, how are we going to try to bring them on board? Do you have brochures so as to popularize your institution? Because maybe they are not actually participating because your institution is not being advocated for popularity. Because in so doing, you'll be making yourself available to the people and you'll be putting yourself in a position of changing the lives of many, many South Africans. Maybe also, I said, Chairperson, I was surprised that all the pages did not have numbers. And if one wanted to refer to a certain page, it becomes difficult. Maybe if you just can have the numbers so that we are able to follow up on those numbers. I hope you are also getting out of administration and you never go back into administration. Because if you go back, it means then there is something about the relationship we are doing. Coming from the tourism sector, because I think tourism and travel has been a big concern in the training of tour guides. Then there are some parts that they have not been informed on, and therefore they could not be accredited in the register of tourism, which becomes quite difficult. So, Chairperson, I really would encourage the committee, the institution, to really, really popularize the way that they do it. Because there are so many people who can be informed and who can gain a lot of information, experience, and actually get into the world of work through your activity. Be loud. You are not loud. Truly, you are not loud. You are the choice.
Thank you very much. And I think when we invite you again, we would like to see your communication strategy. You tell us how you go out there to popularize the work that you're doing. I think it's important. Do you have one? Do you have a communication strategy? Because if you're going to say you have one, then I'll say give it to me. Because I'm telling you, because our experience tells us that sometimes people say we have this document. And when you say give it to me, they're like, oh my word. But you are being honest with us to say that you don't have it yet. But when we invite you again, or when you are invited by the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education, your mother, portfolio committee, you give them your, even without them asking, give them your communication strategy, because you sense that this is a big problem that has been identified by the portfolio committee. I'm now going to give you an opportunity to respond to the question.
No, I apologize. Maybe if you have done a so that they also get offered with it, so that next time when you come, they are aware of what it is all about. Thank you. I'm now going to give you an opportunity to respond. It's not a responsibility of one person to respond to the question. You can divide the questions amongst the scholars.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to the honorable members for the questions that they raised. We equally appreciate the comments that have been made. I want just to assure the committee that we don't intend at all to mislead the members here with the information that you have presented. We are trying to present the picture as is. And in my view, it's not as big as it might look. I think that we move from the premise that there are a number of variables that one should consider when you deal with the issue of concentration of resources across the provinces, and in this regard, the FNM across the world. The reality is that the issue of immigration continues to be a factor because the urban provinces, for instance, like your Algeria, have the infrastructure and the perception that they also have more economic opportunities than rural provinces. Yesterday I was in Switzerland, in the Eastern Cape, in the Eastern district, and Eastern Cape is one of the rural provinces. And we were there to actually deal with the issue that the honorable members are raising, where we identified that in terms of the outreach from our side, there isn't much that we have consciously and deliberately done to actually engage the rural provinces. Northwest, Limpopo, Northern Cape, our provinces, including the Eastern Cape, those are the provinces that in this current financial year we categorize them as rural provinces. And from our assessment of the previous financial year, we've identify exactly that which the members are raising as a concern, the focus on the event. And I have personally been to Northwest as a province to actually engage on these issues. And we have taken a conscious decision on our members to engage the province so that it's not only about the engagement but also to understand the challenges and what exists as an infrastructure for training. We have also engaged Northern Cape in this current financial year, where we went through the premises to actually engage and look at what is it that we could, together with the process of the Northern Cape, start to do around skills development in the sub-sectors that we are responsible for. And we have got a plan that we are working on. So we've taken that conscious approach, and linked to what the honorable members were raising as it relates to communication, it's one of the weaknesses that has been there. That we've not been communicating enough about who we are and what opportunities exist for young people within the city itself. Maybe that to go back and reflect on some of the issues that the honorable members have raised. The city receives, it generally receives revenue from levies from employers that are contributing towards the skills levies. If you look at the slide, the initial slide that was presented here, and you look at the number of contributors, you find that 577 are small entities that are below 50 employees, so they don't contribute. And those that are contributing in total, the mean which is 50 plus, it's about 56. So you've got a case, small case that you need to share with even those that are not contributing because they are small players and they need to benefit. And for us to be able to pull them into the mainstream, we then need to consider them as part of that process. And unfortunately, the resources are not enough and they are likely not to be enough moving forward. But we're doing our best to make sure that it's not only those levy paying entities that benefit, it's also the small players than at the city. We've also committed in this current financial year to save FMME national. We've got a target of about 800 in our APP. And we've broken that across all boards so that SMEs within the subsectors that are responsible for do benefit. Because that's part of the responsibility that we have. In terms of the batteries, what happens is the manner in which the system makes available the resources is through the windows. Our discretionary grant policy stipulates that we need to open two, we've got a first window, we've got a second window. So we have a transparent process where this is in the public domain. Institutions, employers apply for learnerships, for bursaries, for skills programs, and so on. We as a city don't receive applications from individual learners who are living. It's learners that are already in the system, either in universities or universities of technology or TVETs, where the institution themselves identifies these new learners from the rural areas. These institutions and ourselves are part of the value chain of the Department of Higher Education and Training, so we communicate. We also work with NASFAS. We've got money that we allocate to NASFAS so that NASFAS, as part of its mandate to administer batteries on behalf of the public sector, they do receive a portion from us. So institutions of higher learning will then apply for those needy learners and then we allocate. So that's how we allocate those batteries. We take the as I've said, we really take positive and with appreciation the comments, the advice and the input from the members. And I'll allow Mr. Mwanda to take some of the questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Maybe the first one to respond to is on the language policy. That's an indication that we only started this quarter working on the draft. So in short, we do not as yet have an approved language policy. And secondly, explain Pharmatherapy, which appears in African culture and then all the way. Apparently, I understand it to be the expression of pain by people involved. I understand it among the kids in particular. They express their pain through poetic expression, and this is done as part of a healing process. Apparently, it's becoming common in the country, so they call it drama therapy. It seems on both the psychological kind of process, it is related to therapy session. But a drama used throughout the world. So just to move on to other questions that were posed. I think also to emphasize on the question in respect, why do we have more training or allocation located in urban as compared to rural? One of the causes is that the kind of training that we offer is mainly supported by the workplaces, and these workplaces are mainly found in urban areas. While they have not necessarily given us an excuse not to make attempts to be rural areas, as I was saying, towards the So if you have those forces that keep us there, and once we try to reach out into the rural area. Also, it brings to the question in the space of the modern age, not having a location, but I think also because we let the wise here, the allocation of the grant, we then, because of the transparent process and open access, and what happens is that these provinces that do not necessarily have universities located in the provinces are kind of not supported as benefiting. And then what we find is that learners from or another case for Kumara to actually get the same bazaar, but then they are selling in the city or they are selling in KwaZulu-Natal. And our reporting at the moment are not tracking the origin of the learner, but we are actually just reporting on bazaar in some of them we don't appreciate the comments and they're kind of indication that they're saying some of the information or things that we need to check up, and I think we definitely understand that. Also to indicate that we do have roadshows on other things, and we've actually had two rounds of roadshows, and the second round was mainly focused on things in the world that we have thought that popularize what we can do and encourage. And I think we were going to extend of helping them fill in the application forms into our cases that we.
Thank you very much. Another
thank you, Chair. I just wanted to follow up. You know, obviously, I just wanted to say to the administrator, I am a psychologist by profession, and when somebody is an alcoholic that comes to you, the first thing he says to you, you know what, I know I've got a problem, and I'm working on it. I'm not drinking anymore. And that's exactly how the administrator answered the first question. He said, no, but he didn't say, give any indication how he or they are going to address the problem of the rural areas. So that answer is so blessing. The other thing is the response you also get to get in terms of why you don't have a language policy as yet. And also the Honourable Macondo's question in terms of the what are the consequences for the abuse or misuse of the funds by board members, as the board being disbanded, what has happened to this regard. So the answers were very superfluous at best and were just beating around the bush, and there was nothing concrete with all respect coming from the CETA, the entity as such. So we are exactly actually where we started.
Thank you very much. I think the question of the consequences
we should ask from the principal, which is the Department of Higher Education, because the board is the responsibility of the minister. So I don't think the administrator can be in a position to give us that information, but let us get assistance from the portfolio committee on higher education if there's anything that has been reported to you by the minister. I don't have the answer now, but we had the same question to the department also. I just want to make a follow-up question also, that on the response it was mentioned that the universities that are not allocated with bazaars, I mean the provinces, the reason is being that there are not universities next to them or in those provinces. But we've got University of Mpumalanga. In the Northern Cape, we've got the Songkla University. I just want to clarify on that.
Thank you very much. And the issue that is being raised by Honorable Kornbaum, I think is very important. But as the portfolio committee arrived earlier, when you give responses, we want something tangible, something that we can follow up, something that we can measure. So it's important for you to give us, if you are telling us that you are this, give us exactly what you are doing, where you are doing it, how you are doing it, so that we are able, because our constitutional mandate is to oversee, to ensure that you do what you said you're going to do at the time that you said you're going to do it. So it's important when you give information to the portfolio committee, you give it in that fashion, so that we are not found wanting, we don't know how to ask the questions that we need to ask. And I think Honorable Kornbaum is really bringing that to the fore for you to say when you are responding, tell us that this is what we are doing, this is where we are doing it, this is how we are doing it. Even if you are not doing it yet, to say this is what we have, we are planning to do this in July, in August, whatever, so that we are able to measure you, because this is what we are being paid to do here, to oversee what the entities and government departments are doing. So if you can just give us this information, and I think we will follow up the other question with the portfolio committee on higher education, maybe they can raise it with the minister.
Thank you, sir, for the answer. Can I just say some minor things? The administration reported that there was a problem with arts and culture sector. So is it not possible that you request that from the department, because it might be able to provide and then they are able to do the way. Well, all the department that you work with, because you seem to be working on other things to find out about the number so that you are able to do it. And within your department, or even in arts and culture, or whatever other department is responsible, you have the possibility of looking into the option of having some extension officer from within your area to deal with some provinces, so that the issue of rurality is addressed to a certain extent.
I think there was a question from one of the members, how do they work within provinces? I don't think we did get a response. But how do you work? Do you have a one-off meeting in a province? Like in the Eastern Cape, you go to Kisan, that's it. You will go, we have 9 provinces, remember. So if you go to this province, you... When are you going to reach the 9th province? So I think we need to get that picture of how you're doing it.
And one other thing that I think is important is something that as the Department of Arts and Culture would identify, that we work in silos and we like our tabs to say this is my space. But I think it's important for us to work in an integrated fashion. The question that the Honourable Member is raising, that do you ever have a meeting with the Department of Arts and Culture to say, Department of Arts and Culture, can we meet? This is what you have. What do you think? Where can we work together? With all the others. And I think what we need to do also, we are trying on our side to do, because you know, heritage and tourism are related, you know. And if you're having these big numbers in tourism, what is stopping us from working together to ensure that the numbers that you have in tourism can in a way influence your art, culture and heritage? So I think it's important for us to have something that's going to bring us together, where we can begin to say, this is the status quo. How can we work together to ensure that we change, to transform the way that things are happening? Because we can't go on like this. Giving you a few minutes to respond, and I think the question with the department, the department will also come in after the response.
Thank you very much. Maybe just to again indicate that one cat speaker, one of those speakers that don't have provincial offices. We have set a target for ourselves to open offices in 5 provinces in this current financial year. So part of these visits to provinces, especially rural provinces, is to also engage so that we identify a suitable geographical location where the leadership of that particular province is working together with other stakeholders, believe will be, instead of us imposing ourselves to say this is where we think we should be setting up, so that we are closer to our stakeholders from the service provision point of view. So that I was trying to deal with the issue of access, but also being closer to provinces. And as I've indicated, part of the deliberate and conscious effort is to actually try and identify a potential and begin to see what is it that we can do in terms of assisting to support, whether funding, advice or otherwise, to make sure that the welcome is happening in those particular problems. So we will be opening 5 in terms of our plan, which is the current financial year, 5 offices in provinces. We work very closely with departments. After the session, we've got a session with the Department of Tourism, where together we're going to be discussing the issue of skilled audit in the tourism sector and see what are the areas of collaboration. Instead of us as speakers doing our own audit and the department is doing its own, we are looking at the collaboration and how we can then work together around that. In terms of the board, when the Gazette was published, the board was immediately dissolved. So the administrator assumed the responsibility of an accounting authority. So there is no board. The disciplinary steps have been taken in a number of areas. We have people resigning. We have senior managers or managers being dismissed. Just last Friday, we had one former employee of SD that will resign as we're conducting investigations, who was arrested just last week Friday. So I think this is work in progress, but we are at a point where we are believe that we are beginning to close some of the issues that relate. I mean, where we find criminal matters, we report to the police, and police take action. So we've got one person for the direction arrested just on last Friday.
Yeah, I want to add, thanks. I'm from the department, not from the city, but the city of Fort Bend. I think it's important also to keep the perspective in terms of the role president of the city. I mean, the city is correcting what he's saying. The minister instructed that all the citizens we have offices, particularly in Tibet College, and we have undertaken that exercise, and we are almost about to have a sister office in each and every Tibet College. And how this is structured is that and each sita supported by other sitas, so that whatever services that sitas are offering, we could have the reach in terms of the royal community. Now, on the other issue of the board and the management, because as the department and the minister in particular, what happens to the sitas, it becomes very difficult for the minister to know immediately without getting involved, because sitas are strategic persons. And most of the time when there are problems, you know, the board is the closeness. And that's the reason why in this particular sector was based on our administration. And part of the responsibilities of the administrator was to investigate what are the deeper problems, because we could see from the department that there are problems in the sector. And it was all was not functioning in a coherent way. And this is something that the administrator is trying to uncover and report to us and the minister in terms of the actions that are being taken. It is a process because, you know, When you get a sticker that is not even in the ICU but close to the bridge, some of the things you don't pick up immediately. But with time, you are able to pick up that this thing was very serious. And this is the information that we are getting exposed to by the administrator as the time goes by.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. The Department of Arts and Culture, unfortunately, last week, in fact, had a meeting scheduled with CASI, but because of the issues of PACOS, unfortunately, we were unable to make it. But it is an area of work that we really recognize as important. But I think it's also important that the Portfolio Committee recognize that CASI only administers some of the arts and culture sector. We are, in fact, dispersed across a variety of sectors, and that also creates some complications. Previously, under the media advertising, print packaging and publishing CETA, the entire sector was together. But since the change in the CETA landscape, pieces of us have been unbundled into other CETAs. So film is with mid CETA, crafting and manufacturing, and publishing is languishing in one of the forestry and agriculture CETAs. So it is a fairly complex terrain. We do recognize the need for further collaboration, certainly, and we have seen very successful partnerships where, for example, the National Cambodia Foundation is a very active partnership with MedCita, and our intention of meeting with CACITA is to begin to work with the other development agencies in the same vein. I think that one of the real challenges that CACITA faces is that the revenue from the sector, because of the size of the businesses and the exclusion of revenue from companies with payrolls of a particular size, essentially that our sector is a very small contributor to the revenue. In the past, what that has precipitated was, for example, a National Skills Fund proposal which created a specific fund for cultural development, and that's one of the things that we would like to explore with the CACITA. There are also a range of different new areas of work that require qualifications in the vocational education and training field, and certainly we see that the mapping projects that we will be doing regularly will help protect the skills planning process that the teachers run on an annual basis. We had an attempt last year to essentially create a collaborative program with the CETA, but obviously with the organization being under administration, that caused some challenges with regard to that project. But we certainly do recognize, Chairperson, that we don't work with the CETAs closely enough. You saw from the presentation a couple of our institutions working closely. Unfortunately, we as a department do not make a direct contribution to CACITA. We're in fact compelled to make a contribution to PCETA, but our institutions do, and we'd really like to explore avenues of improving that relationship. Certainly, the rural aspects of training and development are very complex, and in some cases, when new universities don't necessarily offer arts and culture programs, as is the case with both of the new universities in the Northern Cape and in Mpumalanga, it will continue to be difficult for bursaries to be offered in those particular provinces. However, that doesn't mean that students can't travel, as we do with our language versions and other kinds of programs. So we really see this as an important area for media partnerships and something we will be pursuing very actively over the next couple of months.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions from another member? There being none, I would like to again thank you very much for the presentation, and as I said earlier, to encourage you to work with us. As this portfolio committee, we have made a commitment that we don't just want to oversee, but we want to support as well. And we are from different provinces. When you put a question mark in front of us, you are looking for our province, because that's where we come from. So you must know that as we sit here, I'm looking at my province, what's happening in my province, and I want to ensure that you do people from my province benefit. But also as a portfolio committee that's within the National Assembly, we are looking at all the provinces, all 9 provinces, because this is what our work entails. In conclusion, I think the work that you are doing is very important. And don't for 1 minute doubt that. It's very important, and I'm reminded of the Chinese proverb that say, if you plan for a year, plant rice. If you plan for 10 years, plant trees. But if you are planning for a lifetime, educate people. Your area get into there, in that space. That if you are planning for a lifetime, educate people, train people, give people skills. This is very important. And there is a shortage of skills out there. And you are called up, especially in the area of arts and culture. So we are appealing to you. We have seen that you are trying very hard, but we are saying try harder to ensure that we reach those people that were never reached. And we must find ways. And as Umarika is saying, we must sit with the department to say, because this is their area, how can we reach the most remote part of Limpopo? How do we get there? Because we are in Limpopo recently, and there are artists there, and artists in their nature are job creators, not job seekers. They are job creators. And can we look at this in that light, that these people are job creators, and all they need is us to give them the skills so that they progress in their life. And when individuals progress, their families progress. When families progress, the community progress. When the community progress, the whole society progresses. So I think it's important. What the work that you're doing is very important. We can never overemphasize that. That we need to look at what we can do. So that at the end of the day, you look back and say, it was not easy, but it was worth it. Thank you very much. We're going to have 5 minutes, and then we'll continue with the work of our committee. I thank you very much. Thank you, honorable members as well. Just 5 minutes for you to grab a cup of tea, and then we'll continue with our agenda. Thank you.
Provided
that information to you. If they do, I'll confuse that they're unlikely to meet the deadline of 30 September at this point.
I sent information to the room. The course presentation that we received last night, I will forward to those that have made hard copies for the results.
I think it's important for the entities and the department to ensure that they give us information timely, so that as the portfolio committee, they actually read the document. Because it doesn't assist if we only get the document a few minutes before we get into a meeting or at the meeting, because we can't discuss documents that we get in a meeting. So we are appealing to the entities. And if they change the presentation, I think we've said this many a time, but if you change the document, this is not acceptable. You need to apply your mind in the first instance to ensure that when you give us a document, because if you give us a document, we are going to prepare on the basis of the document that you give it to us. And when you come to a meeting and change, then it's not working with the committee. So we are appealing to the department and the entities to give us the right statement from the web goal so that we are able to do the work that we are supposed to do. We will look at the statement and engage with them, and if there's anything, we will raise it in our next meeting. We thank you for the statement that I hear. But the issue of cut-off, as you are right, we say it needs the department to be close to it. Even the issue of handouts, the department needs to be close to it. Because what happens is that we throw people into the sea and they can swim or swim, which I think is not good at all. We must support the councils that are there. We must support the CEOs that are there. If there is a CEO and the board, try to bring them together, bridge the gap, because they have to work together. So if you, as a department, you just show the people in, you take a basket, then the problems that we are seeing will actually worsen. And when this thing worsens, you've seen what has happened in other entities. So we are appealing to the department to come closer to the entities. And we have advised that we need to strengthen the unit within the department that's working with these entities. It has to be strengthened, it has to be built up, because 80% of your budget goes to entities. There is no other way. I don't think we have an alternative, but to beef up and strengthen that unit. I'm not sure whether you have started, or maybe if you can tell us this committee how far you've gone with strengthening that unit that deals with entities.
Thank you, Chairperson. We've had a discussion at the executive management level about a whole range of matters of critical areas in the department. Obviously, infrastructure is one of them, but the governance unit in particular is another. So there was a decision to fill all vacancies in that unit. There's a vacant director post and two deputy director posts, which will be filled as a matter of urgency. At the moment, the staff essentially administer 9 entities each, and that's proving to be an unmanageable load. So with the 2 additional staff members and obviously the strategic leadership of the director, it will impact balance quite a lot and bring it down to about 5, and it will also allow for a lot more strategic focus on some of the more problematic entities that we have. Further, there are elements of that particular portfolio which will in fact be handed over to another program, and that will allow for a far more dedicated focus in the context of the governance and administration of entities. we feel that this is a start in terms of how to administer our interviews differently. I'm not saying it's necessarily going to be, excuse me, the magic bullet, but we do feel that these moves will create more capacity and essentially improve the management of the entities from the side of the DAC.
That all she needs to learn as a department is the same way I was saying earlier to the capacitor. That is the personal committee, when you say as soon as possible can be tomorrow, and you can't measure that. You need to be telling us that these vacancies are going to be filled by this period, so that we can come back to you and say, you said, this is what you said. Remember, you are talking to what you have said. So I think it's important when you give us information as the portfolio committee, you say as soon as possible. We don't know what that means. We want concrete information that we can follow up on. I think it's important. Are there any comments? Honorable member? Honorable member? Can we get your presentation done?
Jason, a little bronchy item on skills development. There are essentially two short presentations, one that deals with the DAC itself, and one at the request of the portfolio committee that deals with heritage issues. And my colleague from Heritage is here as well to support me in this presentation. So the DAC skills development plan essentially arises through the regulatory framework in the public service, the Public Service Act and its regulations, the Skills Development Act, and of course the Learning Act, and Department of Human Resource Development Policy. We are a member of PCSER, the Public Service Sector Education and Training Authority, and that creates both a financial obligation, but it also creates an opportunity for us to participate in transversal programs. We have a fully functional skills development committee, which is well represented, including organized labor. We have a human resource development target as per the annual performance plan for 2014-2015, 500 training interventions, and we exceeded that by 27. And these pertain to ad hoc training programs, they pertain to bursary programs, and they pertain to sort of wider initiatives to improve skills in terms of SCM risk management and all of those kinds of very important aspects of the governance work that we do. In 2014-2015, we spent about 2.5 million on training, 1.8 million on training programs themselves, and about 700,000 on bursaries. We also did a direct transfer to PCSER as per a directive from the PSA of about 630,000. Our training and development budget in 2015-2016 is 2.2 million. It is centralized, so in essence that creates an environment within which HR essentially is able to coordinate training initiatives, and it represents 1% of our compensation budget. We expect to be spending about 700,000 on employee bursaries and about 2.9 million in total for workplace human resource development. Our annual workplace skills plan, which is a statutory requirement, was compiled into the PCSER in 2015. It sets out strategic priorities, which are identified through the individual training needs of employees. The development of the individual training needs is part of the performance contracting process in government. They have an element of the performance contract called the personal development plan, and that is essentially where managers and employees agree on training priorities, and that then gets fed up into that larger strategic document. We have an annual internship program, which in 2015-2016 started in June and will take us through for 12 months to June next year. We have 30 graduates and two student interns who have joined us, and they work across a diverse range of portfolios in the department. We conducted an audit in our department on potential ABEG learners and adult basic education learners, but there were no qualifying candidates, and as such we don't have an ABEG program. So our strategic planning training priorities for 2015-2016 pertain to policy development, project management, financial management, records management, management development, which will speak across the entire SMS band, translation and editing, cartographic management, executive management coaching, monitoring and evaluation, foreign language training, and specifically in our international relations division, connections management, specifically for archives, records preservation and conservation, customer care, generally mentoring and coaching on key issues such as human resource management and planning, museum curatorship, and in terms of Project Cairo, which is a broader program that is run by the Department of Public Service and Administration, making sure that we embrace those generic public service management skills. Our priority skills identified for 2015-2016, specifically graphic design, there's a relative scarcity due to the replacement demand, and as a result, we're going to be training at least 7 people in this. And of course, language practitioners, and this is particularly in the growing field of human language technology. It's a completely new area, and we're really struggling to find qualified candidates, so there's an absolute scarcity in this regard, and we expect to be training 3 staff in this regard. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Would you like me to take the 2 presentations together? Thank you very much, ma'am. With regard to the Heritage Skills Development Plan, the Department of Arts and Culture, based on essentially a skills audit, embarked on a bursaries program to increase the number of practitioners in the heritage sector.
This research project, the skills audit, was a skills and a headcount of heritage professionals that were completed in 2008 and 2009 respectively. It highlighted the fact that the heritage sector faces significant challenges in both the supply and demand of skills, which in the longer term poses serious implications for the development of the sector and of course on our capacity as governments to discharge our mandates of heritage promotion and preservation. It's part of a our virtual program is part of a series of interventions that have been identified to reduce the skills challenges. It's not exclusively aimed at young people, but by definition, youth are significant beneficiaries of the program because the bulk of people who are looking at bursaries are new professionals that are wanting to enter the field. And we really wish to support the development, availability, and retention of skilled capital in the heritage sector. It's anticipated that the program will promote an integrated strategic approach that addresses education, training, and skills development, and will also really enhance professional capacity in the heritage sector. So in 2011, we started the program. It caters for aspiring heritage professionals from all provinces studying in a range of different universities, and the slide that will be proceeding this in your feed. We sponsored 83 students in 2013, 73 in 2014, and this year we have 130 students who are with us in the program. So, in essence, through the universities, we have the University of Limpopo with 11, the University of Johannesburg, 3, UK, then 2. So you can see that they're not very large cohorts, largely because at universities, the heritage programs tend to be small, but they are very, very strategic programs, and so we really believe that these students working across the country, working in a range of different groups, range of different research areas are a very critical component of how we will develop heritage skills, obviously in partnership with other institutions. The bursary sponsors students from first year to PhD. In 2013, we had 25 registered in bachelor's degrees, 11 in diplomas, 20 in honors, masters, there were 16, PhDs, there were 2, and in certificate level programs, there were 9 students. Again, recognizing that people coming into the heritage sector will have differing skills, and as such, it's important that the bursary program caters for a wide range of interventions. In terms of 2013, the gender bias was quite profound, 35% were male and 65% were female. So it is very much a woman-oriented sector, and the bursary trends show that. In 2014, again, very similar universities, you have UNISA, UK, in this, Northwest University, the University of Johannesburg, and each of those universities has different cohorts, but I think it's important to note that the University of Limpopo has 24 students. In terms of the qualifications, we only had 2 in certificate level programs, a significant increase in the numbers of people registered for bachelor level programs, honors 3, masters 5, diplomas 4, and 2 PhD students. Again, a significant bias towards women in the cohort, that's slightly better than 2013, 53% women and 47% men. In 2015, again, a large number of institutions, University of the Western Cape, Stellenbosch, Northwest University, and UNISA were the 2 largest cohorts, along with University of Limpopo, again, leading in this area, and making sure, once again, that we get a good national spread of people studying in this field. And it is a challenge that the new universities don't as yet have arts programs, but we're really hoping that as these institutions develop and grow, so the arts and humanities will become core focuses of their work as well. We have 30 people in certificate programs this year, 10 in diploma programs, 69 registered for bachelor's degrees, honors 3, masters 5, and 1 PhD student. In terms of gender, again, a very large cohort, 64% women and 36% men. So that's your business, just an overview of the DAC's bursary program in heritage in response to the skills. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments on the two presentations? I think the issue that you raised earlier, that for instance, if you are saying UNISA, where are the students?
issue is coming from. So I think it's of great importance for the portfolio committee to know this. We want to see this plan. So if you think UNISA as students from involved in deciding through UNISA, so we need to get this information so that we have a picture of what exactly is happening. Are there any other questions or other members? On the two presentations? Are you okay with the presentation? And I was with my colleague, do you want to say something else?
I was just trying to put on the presentation, but there's no one to put.
So as you can see, the honourable members are trying to find it in their package, I don't have it. But I think what's important is as you give us information, as I said earlier, you need to ensure that we can relate to the information. We can actually be in a position to measure you. Because if you think that there are so many students that you are giving better, when you give us a report, it's either you want to dampen our spirits or you want to excite us. So what do we do when you're giving us the number? We don't have a clue how many are out there, what percentage have you achieved. So I think it's important for you when you report to the portfolio committee, you give us a picture so that we are able to measure. This is what we are about you accounting and us measuring if you are achieving something. So I think it's very important. Honourable Corporal, do you want to say something? Okay. I think you will improve on the information that you are giving us and give us timely and try to incorporate this comment that has been. Can we then but if you're looking also in the report that was given by the caretaker, I think you need to come closer to the report because as we are coming closer to the Department of Tourism, there are issues that we are beginning to pick up as we are being aware of this relationship that we need to have. There are issues that we are picking up of your tourist guides that don't have the necessary skills to do this. And some of them in the institutions that you are funding. Some of the things are found in the entities that you find as well. So I think it's important for us to really try to have this integrated working relationship. Do you want to say something?
Yes. I maybe I should just provide just a bit of clarity in terms of some of the two questions that you are raising. Particularly the one on students with regard to UNISA and the one on the measures. You are right, we should be able to provide that information. Though UNISA obviously it's spread throughout the provinces, which would basically mean we would have to say UNISA in the Free State, UNISA in the Limpopo, if that's how I understand it. I guess we can do that. Regarding the measures, in terms of, I'm not very sure if we would be able to measure, simply for one reason, when we advertise, the boundaries is awarded on the basis of qualifications and it's based on, it's dependent on applications. So if we receive 400 applications and then the committee goes through the 400 applications and you file from one university, there's only one application. If
such heavily qualified the community feels he or she deserves, the award. And as you see the numbers, at one institution they will be two simply because they were only two applications. So for instance, in the case of Nelson Mandela Metropolitan Museum, Metropolitan Museum, you received only two applications, and both of them qualified, and they were the banners. And so it's dependent on application. So it's sometimes it would be difficult to say we are measuring you against this because we receive applications and go through the application. Those that meet the necessary requirements will get the banner. But the last one that maybe I need to just address is with regard to the two new universities, one in Mpumalanga and one in Cape. I personally had a meeting with the head of the South Branch University in Kimberley. And at the beginning of the year, they didn't have the programs yet. Only around March they started with a certificate, and a 6-month certificate on heritage management. And I've got a report that they have since completed that certificate. But at the time that we came back to us, we have already allocated the funds, and hopefully they will get the funds sometime next year. I also have a meeting with the Minister of Mpumalanga, and at that university, for now the focus is on agricultural sciences. There are no health-related programs, so they couldn't have what their partners. So this is just a brief status on the partners as of now. Yes.
Okay, thank you
very
much. What I can say is that, take for instance, Limpopo. You look at the heritage landscape in Limpopo and say, in this area, we would need 20 heritage people who are heritage inclined, who are doing work within the heritage sector. This is what we need when we look at the landscape of heritage here. We need, as the department, you do that. You don't just fold your arms and wait for people to apply. It's your money. You go out there to do your research, to find out that there are so many that we need. But this year, out of this trade, you are going to give only two. So that we know that if you give two, you are left with 18. So in so many years' time, we will know that I have achieved what I'm supposed to achieve. You go out there as the department to do the study, to do the work that has to be, the groundwork that has to be done for you to get information. In fact, there should be other institutions that have done the groundwork and you get the information so that your planning is informed. You don't just wake up and say to, we're giving two. On what basis are you giving two? You know? And encourage pupils, younger from primary school. So if you say that at university we only have two young people that are interested in heritage, because we know the landscape, we need to ensure that from primary school level we try to, what's the right word? To entice young people to get into this space that has this gap skill. So I think it's important for us to do things in a manner that's not like we are comforting, but we know exactly what we need. This is what I meant. You go to the Eastern Cape, you go to Kwazulu-Natal, to all these areas, to find out exactly what is the ideal number of heritage workers that you need in that area. Then you are able to say, okay, this is the plan. Because without that information, you will always come back to your planning. And your planning will depend on what other people are giving you. So I think it's important. This is what I meant. We will now go to the update on the Arts and Culture White Paper. Monica, you know that you owe me. Yes. Because I received an SMS, a phone call from an artist, and this person was saying that we were called into a meeting, a workshop, and you were told that this process is going to that aspect. But since that workshop, nothing is happening. And I've been calling the department and I'm not getting any information. I think, Monica, this is totally, totally unacceptable. You can't get people calling the portfolio committee because they are not getting responses from the department. We can't accept that. It's not acceptable. The department must ensure that it gives people the information that they need. There is no time to ask to the portfolio committee members to say, we've been trying to get this information from the department, but we're not getting any joy. You need to find a way of responding to the people that you are sending. Otherwise, we are not here to do your work. Tina, our work, I mean, is stipulated in the Constitution. So we don't need to do your work. Yes, we said we are prepared to support, but we support when it is necessary, not when you are lazy to do your work. We can do that. And when people come to us, we ask them, when did you call the department? They give us the details. And in fact, they send us the emails, they copy us the emails that they have sent to the department. It's not fair on the people. It's not good for any of us. So this briefing, so you should make it brief and please, and this briefing that you're going to give us should be given to those people who are in the workshop so that they have the information.
Thank you, Chairperson. This is the presentation that I'm doing is slightly updated, and I beg your forgiveness, Chairperson, essentially picked up a major error in the final notes where inappropriately a legislative process was referred to rather than a policy making process, and I've amended this in this presentation, and a revised copy has been handed out. So in essence, essentially in the interest of time, Chairperson, I'm going to skip to point number 3, which is the description of the white paper process today, because I think the portfolio committee has heard the presentation on why the need for the review, which essentially is covered in the earlier stages. So in essence, we have a project team appointed in February 2015 to, headed by the acting DG himself, to prepare a project plan and implementation timeframe. A concept document was submitted and approved to the ADG. And in late March 2015, a series of public invitations were issued, and these are very much what artists were then involved in. Following the initial round of public consultations, it was decided to extend this project into the last quarter of 2015 to accommodate more representative samples. And that, again, is a process that we're still working on. An interim report based on the preliminary findings was submitted to the Minister in July, and that really checklist and should have been circulated to everybody that participated in those workshops. In terms of the overall approach, there's several factors which are being considered, and it's a very complex area given that there's existing policy, given that there's policy in other domains, and as a result, we've taken a sort of staged approach, which is essentially a review of policy documents and program data, the development of the research approach and methodology, and then based on the initial base, the design of the workshop format and schedule, and that was very much what was delivered earlier in the year. Document review consultations have been held, and as a result, those 4 provincial workshops, which will be followed up by workshops in other provinces, very much were initially selected to start getting a sense of what the issues were, so that those could then be presented back into more detailed discussions. So if I skip to the process going forward, in October and November, we will be having further consultation processes in the northern case of Mpumalanga and Northwest, Northern Province, sorry, Limpopo, is the Northern Province. My apologies for that error. These are the provinces that were neglected in the past, but it's also important to note that stakeholders such as the Cultural and Creative Industries Federation is also having up its own series of policy consultation workshops so that it can make an input into that. Through the DAC structures, particularly our CEO's forums, we've been having discussions with the performing arts sectors, the development agencies, and the heritage institutions, also hear their perspective on policy, not only because they are obviously stakeholders in the process, but they are also experts in their field. In terms of the submission process, the revised draft will be essentially drafted between November and December, submitted to Cabinet as a green paper. Once approved, it will be published in the Government Gazette for public comment. The final draft will be referred to Parliament for further consultation under the standard case of policy in this country. And it's anticipated that the final draft will be submitted to Parliament and obviously to the Portfolio Committee for that wider consultation process in the first quarter of 2016. Then obviously the National Assembly will make its recommendations back to Cabinet, and the document will be published as a white paper, and it will then effectively replace the white paper on arts, culture and heritage 1996. So we do envisage the conclusion of this process by March 2016. I think, Chairperson, your comments as you opened this are noted. We've definitely been struggling with the pace of this program. It sort of started and then it stopped, and it's going to be starting again. We recognize also some of the gaps in giving feedback to delegates from those workshops, as we promised. But what we will do is that review document will now be circulated already, and people will be invited back into processes because now that discussion document is in the point of departure for discussion. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I think as the Portfolio Committee, we appreciate the fact that you responded to our call that all provinces should have, you know, this consultative workshop so that you don't do it in Gauteng, Cape Town and Durban, but to go to all the provinces. We really appreciate that. But I think what's important also is what I said earlier, that we need to get the day to say, on this day we're going to be, you are saying between October and November, give us the day. Right, on this day we'll be there, if on this day we'll be there. Because there are members from those provinces, and we need to know to ensure that it happens in our provinces. We want to assist the people who are in the sector that is the portfolio of people who are working in our provinces. So I think it's important for you to give us the date, and we will measure you against the date that we give us. Are there any comments on that? There being none, can we then proceed to Usaba? Just briefly tell us what is happening with the agreement that you made.
Thank you, Chairperson. As you are well aware, we had a meeting with the Deputy Public Protector, discussed a whole range of issues that were still outstanding. The primary one is, in fact, the renovations to Sarah House, and of course, the ongoing facilitation for both the budget shortfalls of the renovation, but also the other functioning of the South African Roadies Association. We had a series of internal deadlines which pertained to the submission of documentation to the DAC by South African Roadies Association. The Roadies met those deadlines, however, there were some gaps in the documentation. We have provided that information requested to SARA, so they will get back to us by the 9th of September. We essentially need a detailed narrative on the plan to renovate SARA House. Obviously, there's been a number of assessments, there's been a range of different quotes, but we really need input from the institution itself as to what are the critical areas of renovation that need to be done. And we expect that information to come to us by Wednesday, in fact, tomorrow. The detailed budget breakdown also is necessary from SARA. In essence, we have a degree of that from a report that was done a couple of years ago by the IDT, but we really need SARA to update that and to indicate how the funds that the 10 million rand, which is ring-fenced by the Department of Arts and Culture, will be utilized. And again, we're expecting that information tomorrow. We need a plan and an approach that SARA will propose on how to raise the balance of the form there. They've given us a list of organizations that they would like to approach, but it's critical that we understand what we're approaching these institutions for. So that we can essentially design a program that allows us to approach the right people for the right kind of support. And again, we've asked for that information by Wednesday. We had a meeting with regard to the question of a facilitator. The Deputy Public Protector was had recommended that we consider using an implementing agency. Now, the DAC has some experience of using both the Independent Development Trust, the IDT, and DPW, obviously, where state actors are involved. And these organizations have proved to be very, very complex for us to deal with. So the decision that the DAC made was that we would actually provide the funding to SARA with a series of conditions as to the kinds of facilitation that the entity would need to establish itself, the kinds of project team that we would expect to see on the ground. We are expanding our capital works, our infrastructure management resources as well, so there will in fact be an assigned project manager from ourselves. So the contracting process will be directed between ourselves and the South African Road Use Association with clear conditions as to how those funds need to be administered, the kinds of professionals that they need to have on board, and the kinds of plans that they will need to make. We are of the view that this will greatly facilitate the very urgent renovations that are required to SARA, but will also help us to move the implementation of the settlement agreement forward. The remaining issues relate to facilitation. So SARA has asked us to approach the National Heritage Council, the National Heritage Resources Agency, various cultural institutions, the Department of Public Works, the Independent Development Trust, the Housing and Government Infrastructure Department, the City of Johannesburg, and the National Lottery. Now, obviously, each of these organizations has their own mandate. Some of them may be able to provide funding support, some of them may be able to provide support in kind. And that's a process that we're trying to work with SARA to understand what exactly they would like to request from these institutions. So we've asked for SARA to give us some information. We expect that our letters of endorsement and support will be signed and sent by the 16th of September. Equally, for the funding of operations, the road users have asked that they are processing some revolving economy program, Business Arts South Africa, the National Arts Council, and the National Lottery Distribution Trust Fund. Again, those letters of endorsement are a bit easier to do, and we again envisage that those would be drafted and signed by the 16th of September. And Jefferson, at the moment, what we have is a weekly feedback system from officials to myself, and we are then able to report a lot more quickly on areas where we're struggling with paperwork or with projects. And that will continue until such time as we've essentially concluded this phase of the settlement agreement. Thank you very much.
Hello, are there any comments or questions on the SARA issue? No, I don't feel that we are moving forward. I don't know why. It's like we are going around in circles. We're just changing the format of the way we reported it in the last meeting, and then just changing it. Because I don't see any movement forward. I'm sorry if I'm being difficult. Because there is a lot that should have happened already that is not happening. And if we could, honorable members, if we can bring SARA here, I'm telling you, they're going to say the opposite of what is being reported. They will say, we've given this information, we gave this information long ago. But I think what we need to do here, because we can't have them here, we have to find a way of getting their side of the story. Mm-hmm. Can we have another proposal?
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate the briefing. But the having listened to the briefing and to the, I don't know if I call it prerequisites and so on, it seems that in the end, SARA will just throw their hands in the air and say there's no way they will get money from the departments. Because of all these parameters and things that have been put down, so there's such a lot that you will feel it's not worth it anymore.
Honourable members, this is from 2008. Can you imagine? From 2008 until today. It's only now that we are coming up with all the things that we should have come with long ago. I also have this feeling, Honorable Popo, that if it was me, if I was Baba, I would say, I would throw in the towel. And because the manner, I don't know, the manner in which this thing is unfolding doesn't make, they don't make the Catholic community comfortable. I need to be honest with you, but I think what we need to do is, if some you can call her so that they give us their side of the story. Because I feel that we need to get home first.
But just like an idea, when they would say, I don't know if they took the most action in the time, and then just be to the next day. You see, the government is not there. If you are really upholding all your entities, can you really to us in the same information? If you can come with this format of two sides and come up and say, this is the timeline that you are getting when you think that you are. You cannot purchase one entity and leave the entities that we know that are hidden to ourselves. And actually, you're right, maybe Salam has come and tell us the story because really this is another song. But they must implement this song to them. To them, it's coming because there are things that they cannot even reach the timeline to ourselves. Why should Salam come out to this day?
Thank you, Honourable Members. We are not happy. And the Deputy Public Prosecutor made it clear that they are, I don't want to say shifting the thing, but they are putting this as the responsibility of the Portfolio Committee now, and we are appealing to you. We're going to get the other side of the story, and we are going to ensure that you do what you are supposed to do. And you have a signed contract. You have that thing, that document, that is signed, page by page, which is a legal document, I mean, if you do that, it is signed. Page by page, they have initials, and at the end, they have signed. That they are going to do all those things for us. And we come to the next, we can't go back now. We've gone too far to turn back now. We've come too far to turn back now. So I think we need to actually do what we are supposed to do. And not make things difficult for those people. Because we are the ones that we said we're going to give you 10 million. Let's find a way of ensuring that we do that. And I think the pace, in fact, these dates are falling in this week, yes. So as soon as we come back, let's get all this information. In fact, even before that, Tuesday next week, we're not having a meeting, but let the information come to the community. Thank you very much. We are not happy at all with this presentation of the whole thing. It's not fair. What we also need to talk about, Honourable Members, is the issue of the report of Khaja Asma. What is our position as the committee? Maybe the department, have you discussed this, and do you have a position as the department before we discuss it as the committee?
Chairperson, the report is obviously of considerable importance and is quite old now as well. But I think that the issues of clarifying the status of PANSEL is critical. And that is still a very outstanding issue from the Arsenal report. The National Treasury undertook a performance and expenditure review on the entire language system and equally made a series of recommendations around all of us that are working in the language environment, the National Language Service, Pan-South African Language Board, and the Commission, CRL. And in essence, that essentially requires a significant policy impetus to begin to look at how these systems work. So our our position is that these reports are essential to inform policy, and that policy is required. But at the moment, the matters around PAMFA are in essence around stabilizing the organization. And as a result, the sort of policy impetus has almost sort of taken a step back in terms of the situation that the institution finds itself in now. But I think that it is something that does need a lot more discussion at this level, at the legislative level, and of course at a political level as well, to ensure that we are clear about what the approach to the language system in the country will be going forward.
The current account report is clear that we need to dissolve PAMFA, in fact to merge PAMFA to CLR. CLR, Religious and Language Commission. Yeah. So, what is the position of the committee on this? Do we think that if they are merged, things will be better, or do we think, because I, with cancer, I don't know, because if you look at this year, that has been here, as a portfolio committee, we have not derived any joy from the work that has been done by PAMFA. I don't know whether the department has it. Does have hope? Because as we move forward, the situation is not getting better. So I would like to hear what the honorable members are saying, because we are having a meeting on Friday where all these institutions that are supporting democracy are going to look at the Kade Asman report and come up with a recommendation of how this should be handled. Are there any suggestions that I need to take to the meeting?
If it goes to a push, I don't know whether that is allowed in terms of the agree with that. That institution. Because if that institution can be administered rigorously to see a result, because the issue is small issues of attitudes of people, lack of leadership, both in the board and also the money chain. Government issues, they are not speaking on government issues. And what is surprising is the issues that were raised here by different courts, it's what we are seeing currently. It's what we are seeing that they were, last time when they were dealing with the report, there was another board. They identified local problems. And again, the problems that were identified by this report, we are still identifying the same problems, and this is 10 years down the line, or plus or minus 10 years down the line, and they are still having the same problems in place now. Here, the department has been working with justice on this matter. It's a pretty important thing to kind of discuss about the itself. The minister and the minister are here, and people who are leading, they political heads of that institution. We really want to get them, and they really have to understand the situation that is in the institution. All of those are the things, the unfortunate information should be implemented. All of everything that is said here, and it's very interesting. I even went to that side of the public protector because I was really very interested in those also. There are all things that are interesting, you know, like there was perfect timing that
thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Fasson and Honourable
Chair, thank you. I have not read the CASA school report. I just had access to it. But the last report that I read, because this was published this year or last year, the one of the public administration research institute, which also recommended that PANSOG be merged with the Commission for the Promotion and Protection of Rights of Council in Linguistic Communities. Now, because then it will save government approximately about 38 million rand in terms of public funding, which could be utilized or used elsewhere. So, in all fairness, I think there has been an effort to try and get things right, but I think there is still the niggling issue that PANSOG has, that they are not, they don't have to report to us. They still have that, and that is why you find this reluctance, and only now we get these after some pressure, we get this report. I still will read them, but I feel that in all fairness that these 3 months, because it will be less problems. You will remember last year, October, we said after 5 years we will still be struggling with cancer, and the year's gone, and we are exactly where we are.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Member.
Professor, my name is short. I think I will amend my first one, because the issue of the cancer is a long issue. When we came here under this colony, it didn't take the challenges of cancer. What Honourable Member said, he informed last year, after 6 years now, and nothing is informed in cancer. And Chair, what are we saying about the money of cancer, and what are we saying in terms of respecting the constitution of the country? So we are rounding in one subject, and there's an issue of funds that are involved. And we know on the issues of disarming, if nothing is why people are dying from the court, you know? And itself, the department can't even deal with the issue of cancer. So for us as a community to respect the dignity of the father, especially on the issue of the language, we see what is happening now, what is coming on the issue of the language. So it's for us as a community to protect and aid that the persons are getting well. You know, there's no condition that they can't bring home. So there may be an issue happening, especially on the issue of families. Imagine the sons that are going to cancer every year, that some of them are non-accounting, that but a cancer is one like a human condition, so that is called family or issue of family. So but it's a TAC within the constant sense. But for having, I think it would be in the context, if the department wants to be concerned, we are supposed to be long after under the expression. So nobody wants to send them a big vision in terms of
thank you very much, Honourable Members. You are advocating me. I think it's important that when I go to the meeting, I go with the mandate of the committee and not go with what I think and how I feel. I thank you very much for that. The meanings of the last meeting are not, we're going to deal with them in our next meeting. And I want to thank you, Members, for availing yourselves for this meeting. And I'm hoping that as we move forward, the work that we are doing, we are really an A team as this portfolio committee. And the work that we are doing should not only be seen, but it should be felt by the people that we are representing. I want to thank you very much. And I also want to thank the department for the presentations and the responses that you gave. And as I usually say, to talk about you, don't personalize things that we discuss and the questions that we ask and the comments that we make, don't personalize them. It's not meant to be questions to you, but it's meant to be questions to the department and also to ensure that the services that have to be delivered are delivered. Thank you very much. I appreciate the meeting.